Thank you. Coming up next on 101.3 FM, which is Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Today is May 15th, 2014. Stay tuned. Lots of interviews. Who knows? Maybe even a call or two and an analysis of latest city council doings, plus some updates on protests yesterday against jail construction and against the war in the Ukraine, the looming war. That's a civil war supported by the U.S.
The whole problem for only one reason that president raises the question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason, a president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 99 dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To all imperialism? Who owns the land?
Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? oppressors. Raises the question, who owns us?
Land, ecocide, genocide. Where is home? Ecocide, genocide. Where is home? Ecocide, genocide. Where is home? Ecocide, genocide. Where is
home?
And that, of course, was Land by Five. And as mentioned before, you are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. We're at freakradio.org on your computer dial. And we archive at the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website, huffsantacruz.org, in case you want to hear an old show. Almost all of them are there from the last 9 years, I think it is. And we've been broadcasting. The show's been going for actually 19 years. So someday, who knows, you may be able to go back even further for those who are really addicted to this. I have yet to meet such a person, but you never can tell. Anyway, coming up for the next 2 hours, I am going to be talking about and playing tapes around recent Santa Cruz events, particularly concerning civil rights for homeless people and political goings-on in Santa Cruz, attempts to repress them, masquerading as attempts to assist them. It's always the way. And in the studio with me is another activist, Punch 'Em Out Pat Colby. I've got different names for her depending on my mood at the moment. Pat, say something into the mic. Let's see if you can be heard.
Okay.
I think you can.
Can I be heard? Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we could begin, since you're the live studio guest, and I've always been critiqued for paying too little attention to my studio guests, which you'll probably find is the case. And I believe you called me this afternoon because you were trying to get Sergeant Bush to give a citation to an upstanding citizen for sitting on a low-lying planter berm?
It was a planter with the fence, the really major offense, and then he was loitering while sitting there drinking his coffee.
Uh-huh.
Right behind the Santa Cruz PD's brand new vans, SUVs.
And where was this?
This was right on Pacific. It was just a little bit down from Forever 21. And so as I drove by, I saw Sergeant Bush walking in that direction. He's one of our sergeants on our police force that I've had some interactions with. And so I called him over and I told him about this terrible heinous crime that was taking place. And I told him, you know, he needed to go over there and cite the man, you know, arrest him, cite him, like he would any homeless-looking person. I told him, in fact, that it was a resident or a tourist. It wasn't a homeless person. So I found that he didn't go over there and cite the man. So I called the business line, which anyone can call. Whenever you see an officer breaking the law by not enforcing the law, you call 471-1131. And I talked to dispatcher Parker the first time, and I told him I'd like to make a citizen's complaint that a police officer wasn't doing his job. And I said Sergeant Bush allowed a heinous criminal to violently sit on that planter and not be cited with a $300 ticket, like I've seen other people where they've just sat down for a second and they've got two cops on them. So I did call in and report that, and I cruised around the block because I wanted to see if he actually did go and give that ticket to that man, because I didn't see him go in that direction. And it took me very little time, like 2 minutes, to go around the block. And by the time I was there, the man was gone, and there was no police officer, but the SUV van, these big new cars that they bought on our taxpayer money, was still there. And with the little amount of time, logically, he should have still been writing that man a ticket. So he probably just gave him a warning. I have to point out there was a community service officer hanging out at the kiosk for the information for Santa Cruz, just loitering away, talking to that person. And then as I cruised further down the street in the opposite direction, on the opposite side of the street, I did catch up with Sergeant Bush. He was talking with Sergeant Lamas on the corner there. They were gabbing, loitering. And then there was this so-called, yet-to-be-proven, outreach social worker that goes around downtown passing out cards. His name is James Russell. I've had some interactions with his clients who haven't been very happy. And then when I brought up his name to someone at the Homeless Service Center, they kind of made a despairing sigh. So it was nice that we're paying them to hang around downtown and not cite or arrest these heinous criminals. So I did call back to the business line again and make another complaint about him. And they said that he would be calling me. And they had my number. And it's been like, it happened at 3 o'clock, so it's been almost 3 hours now, and I'm still waiting for that call back.
No, don't wait up. That's my advice.
Yeah, I told him I wouldn't hold my breath.
Yeah, you know, this of course, is all about, it seems to me, based on what you're telling me, about your attempt to document selective enforcement and to, you know, somehow hold police officers accountable or make them aware.
I can take photos.
Make them aware that they are being observed. And photos are a good thing.
And they're profiling.
Videotapes are even better. But and that's really what I think I've suggested to people do, is that is to video police officers walking by middle-class citizens doing exactly what those who are, say, homeless appearing do and not getting any action, and follow the officer down the street and video them directing or harassing or citing some person who looks different. But, you know, it's not that one can actually get any kind of court action on this, because it's a very difficult case to prove. But it is a way of embarrassing and perhaps pressuring the police department to act differently. And I think it's a good thing to do.
I think it's verbally holding them accountable.
And I think, you know, following up on this with calls to the police department and so forth, it's good. Although I would suggest you do it with emails as well, because emails are documented, whereas calls are more difficult to document.
Oh, yes. My brother and I always do email backup. They try to tell us that we can't do emails to the city employees.
No, you can.
They want calls, because email gives you a paper trail, which you can hold people accountable with, whereas calls,
Yeah, I don't know what the reason. I don't know if they would, if that's even, you know, that's a conspiracy.
We've run into that problem quite a bit.
I mean, you know, it's certainly better to get a paper trail. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily trying to avoid it. But, you know, for them, I think for the police department particularly, I know in the last decade, the police chief, the former police chief, Steve Belcher, that was actually his name, attempted to disguise all complaints under the name inquiries. So they would not be essentially put into officers' files, so they would not be reviewable by the then already neutered but still theoretically existent Citizens Police Review Board in Santa Cruz. And so they do, you know, I say police departments are nervous, at least this one in the past has been nervous about a paper trail. And, of course, I found in trying to get the details behind Scott Collins, he's the assistant to the assistant city manager's collusion with the SCPD's bike banditry division, which essentially stopped all bikes going to the bike church for 2 years and passed them on to Hillary Bryant's pals over at the bike dojo. And now they're, of course, being dumped into auctions in different parts of the state without getting to young people, or I guess it's disadvantaged youth is the phrase that are supposed to be getting them. But, you know, Collins, who tried to justify the procedure of not returning these bikes to the bike church, continues to insist, or at least that's what you get from his emails, that he has no paper trail whatsoever about the basis on which he made, I think, six separate claims about incompetence on the part of the bike church. And one of the longtime workers of the bike church, Stephen Schnarr, who I've spoken with repeatedly about this issue and has emailed First Mayor Bryant, actually First Mayor Lane when he was mayor, then Mayor Bryant, and now Mayor Robinson. I don't know if he's actually bothered to get through to Mayor Robinson, because one can only expend so much energy on these things before realizing that one's growing old and gray and there are better things to be doing. So, yeah, I agree with you. Doing this kind of stuff is very important. Go ahead, Pat. You have a thought?
Well, the point I want to make is, actually, this is all centering around public records acts, which are supposed to force our governments to be open and transparent. And my brother does a lot of public records, and he's run into, and he's gone to FOIA experts and public record experts about this, and they've been scratching their head how Santa Cruz is able to not be open and transparent. So it's not that there aren't records, it's just that they're not going to give them to you like they are supposed to by law.
And there's also the city council's finagling with email. I've come across this a lot in the last decade, where city council members set up private emails, which they claim they're not required to either retain them, and they're not required to reveal them, but in fact they are, although...
If they use them during doing city business,
well,
they
if,
are.
If it has to do with city business, one would think it's required. But again, that's one of the tactics they've used. Don Lane claimed when he was mayor, he actually was one of the first mayors who actually agreed to open up his emails. He also agreed to open up his calendar so we could know when and where he was going to be appearing in public appearances. And he agreed to open up, all these were three requests of mine, to open up his meetings with lobbyists. That is to say, not that you couldn't come to them, but he would tell you who he met with and when and so forth.
That's all part of open and transparent government.
It's not required, of course, by law, a lot of this stuff, but it should be. At least it wasn't required several years ago. Maybe they've gotten better since then. So, yeah, that's, you know, it's good to keep pushing because... well, some people enjoy it,
well,
as
we're just talking
but
it at our Huff meeting.
But it's also, you know, if you want to educate the public about what's really going on, you have to show them what's really happening, not what the authorities say is happening. Authorities may be correct in some cases, but in many cases they are defending their behavior and they can tend to be inaccurate or just simply lying to you. You know, that can happen too.
That's why it's important not to do phone calls, because we've had them say one thing in a phone call and then deny it. So that's why if you actually get them in an email or on paper,
well, you can do
then
both.
They can't deny it.
I would say do both. And you know,
and this is all levels of your government doing this.
Anyway, getting back to the most recent public records that I've been seeking to get, I'll sort of pass on to all you listeners out there who may be interested in these issues. I've been making some requests to the Santa Cruz Police Department. You may remember last year the City Council threw a homelessness study session, which actually was simply a precursor to the formation of its task force to generate public hysteria around issues like needle disposal and homeless people camping in Poganip areas and in residential areas, or actually anywhere in the city area or the surrounding city, or even outside the city near Emmeline Street. And the whole point was to show that these homeless people, we used to try to show that there was a lot of money being spent on homeless people with these ridiculous sleeping ban tickets. And we thought that was a good weapon to show the community how stupid this whole process was. When people have to sleep at night, they're going to sleep at night. So why are you arresting them for simply sleeping at night, being there? Now, however, the tables of that kind of were turned on us, and they said, well, see all the money we have are spending on these homeless folks? That shows the kind of bite that the homeless people are putting into the budget. They have to be driven away. This has to be addressed as a major crime issue. We have to find ways, and of course, then they start wrapping it up in these other sort of guises like medicalization. Oh, these poor people are crazy. Oh, they're alcoholics. Oh, they're drug addicts. And then, of course, we have these people who are bums and freeloaders. We're too welcoming. All these become the new memes, the new kind of mantras, which unfortunately liberals have sort of signed on to, at least insofar as they bought this public safety bullshit. That is to say, the notion that there has been some sort of public safety crisis in the last year. And I've of course, inveighed against this for a long time. And one of the ways I've tried to address this is by going to the City Council's Police Department, and I call it the City Council's Police Department because... it certainly isn't our police department.
No.
And so to ask them, okay, well, let's find out some things. One thing I haven't done is found out the costs of all this, except in sort of vague terms. But there were reports made by Deputy Chief Steve Clark last year to this homelessness task force that I think he said the second or 30 or 40% of the homeless citations, of calls and citations that year were around homeless issues, which is kind of hard for me to believe because homeless people only involve like 3% of the city's population at most. And the idea that everybody else is sparkling clean and isn't getting, I don't know. You know, I am not a criminal expert and I have not gotten all the records, but I wanted to find out exactly what this great big crime wave he was talking about. And I think he was referring, he took seven different offenses that he noted had resulted in a huge number of calls in the Poganip and the parks and elsewhere, probably generated to some extent by groups of individuals who are either concerned about the value of their property or have been hyped up on the downtown neighbors, Santa Cruz neighbors, Take Back Santa Cruz groups who want to gentrify the area. And as I say, they want, some of them very well intended, because they believe homeless people are some sort of a crime magnet, or at least they're certainly an unsightly magnet that detracts from their property values or makes them feel insecure. As I'd like to put it so genteelly, it's the perception of danger that they're concerned about. We want to eliminate the perception of danger. And rather than go to a nice psychiatrist or, you know, I don't know, listen to some soft music or take a trip somewhere, go to take a swim, they want to eliminate human beings from the area as a way to resolve their anxieties. And, of course, I've always found this, it's amusing if you're not the target of it. If you are the target of it, of course, it's, you know, frightening.
Well, you look at history, what does that show? You know, we've seen that kind of cleansing through history, and it never accomplishes anything. It's not a constructive way of solving problems. It's a really negative and destructive way.
So the public records that I sought from the police department had to do with the citations that they gave out. I mean, what were these crimes that the police department is spending so much money on? You know, that people, that homeless people are now put into a situation because the city council has changed the laws that makes it, if you do three minor infractions, sitting near a building, I don't know, being in a parking lot, reading a book in your car when you're not parking, if you're not removing your car or driving in, I guess you can read while you drive in, but you can't read while you're sitting there because that's illegal under a council member and mayor and now, unfortunately, likely supervisor Ryan Coonerty's parking lot panic law, as I call it. All the city parking lots are criminalized here. So the issue is, what are these actual laws that these crimes that we're talking about? Maybe we'll have some criminals calling in here. Let's see. Hi there, you're on Free Radio with Pat and Robert.
Hey, this is Aria. I was just calling in. I just wanted to see if anyone was in the studio, and it looks like you are. Sorry to bother you. I just wanted to say hello.
No problem, Aria. And, of course, yeah, I'm generally here 6 to 8 every Thursday, rain or shine, but who knows? Maybe there'll be a change in that schedule. You never could tell.
Fantastic. I was wondering if there's any possible way I might be able to just stop by for just...
You can always stop by. Remember, though, that since you're talking to the community, if you want to say anything, you're on the air, old man, and if you want to talk about...
Oh, well.
Say hello to everybody out there.
I'd like to say to everyone out there, you know, keep listening to my friend Robert's show. He does a great job, you know, he's a very active voice in the community here, and he's always definitely shedding light on, you know, the news that needs to be heard and the corruption that seems to have fallen this lovely Santa Cruz County that we're all working so hard to maintain.
And along with, in order to show true truth in broadcasting, when was the last time you actually, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
When was the last time you actually listened to my show?
Yes.
When was the last time you actually listened to my show?
Last time was actually, had to have been, I think I listened to a repeat about a little over a month ago.
All right, so we wouldn't call you a regular listener.
No, not at all.
No, I mean, and there's nothing to be ashamed of. I love talking, and I can't, you know, I can't get enough of myself. But, you know, most people would probably, you know, dip in and dip out and dip-de-dip. But, you know, all this praise you're giving me, much as I like you, Aria, sounds like a lot of horseshit unless you're actually listening to it and enjoying it. So I just wanted the listeners to know that you're a sweet, loyal Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster. You have your own show. When is it on, and what's it all about?
Oh, I appreciate that. My show is actually every Wednesday from 1 to 4 p.m., and that is called Happy Hour with DJ Namaste. And I'm actually in the middle of training a couple other co-hosts, and you're going to be hearing from them as well the following week. So what we do is we have 3 hours. It's a positive reggae radio show. The first hour, we like to broadcast, you know, positive news, you know, in the community, around the world, announcements. You know, shed light on things that, you know, you don't usually hear on the news. And then the second hour, we play a full hour of reggae, you know, from all around the world and from artists that we're in touch with directly. And then the third hour, we like to support local music by having a live band come and play.
Wow. And so how can folks get in touch with you if they want to, you know, be a band on your show or, you know, otherwise impact or, you know, get included in what you're doing?
You can come in contact with me through Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/FRSC Happy Hour, or you can always send an email to us at freakradio.org. Is that correct? Or what is our email? I'm sorry.
You know, that's our website. I don't know if we actually have an email. I'm sure we must. If you want to go to the website, freakradio.org, and there's a way to get to us through that website, I believe. We have an internal email that I use, but I don't think that's the one that you would want to give out necessarily.
I believe frsc@freakradio.org might be an email they can reach us. So if you can always frsc@freakradio.org, let us know through there. And
okay.
And we'll make sure look out for any bands and any talent coming through. We're happy to support the local community. And, you know, that's exactly what makes us free radio. Yeah.
Fair enough. And I understand there's somebody lurking outside the studio door, and we may have to call the police. So I've got to hang up on you now. We'll talk more later.
All right. Sounds good. Well, good luck with that situation.
All right, man. And actually, that's none other than the very same Aria who's going to be coming into the studio for some nefarious purpose of some kind. We'll have to figure out what that is, but if anything is newsworthy, I can assure you we will bring it to your attention. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. Call-in number is 427-3772, 427-3772, or 469-3119, 469-3119. Either of those numbers will hopefully put you on the air, and then we can take it from there. So I'm going to... I was talking about the Public Records Acts that I've actually gotten some responses to from the police department. And again, what I'm trying to do is there are two main areas I'm looking at. One is the area of tickets that the homeless people are given in parks and the Pogonip, because that's the basis for claiming they're the big criminal element we have to deal with, you know. And one has to see what these crimes consist in. And it looks like they consist in things like almost overwhelmingly the main crime in the parks, at least for the last 3 or 4 months, has been, of course, sleeping or camping, which is to say that is that's if you look at all the tickets, the plurality, that is to say the greatest number of tickets is being given for people who are sleeping. And there's other things like smoking, which is another crime that, of course, requires all kinds of police resources and time and money, because we know we don't want people to be smoking in distant regions of the park that might, offend the squirrels or upset. It's hard for me to see how such a large park as San Lorenzo Park, it would even be an issue if people are smoking in the boonies somewhere. You know, maybe if they're blowing their smoke at the ducks in the duck pond or doing so on the bridge where people have to walk by and somebody's got asthma. You know, I mean, and you're raising your hand, Pat, so you obviously have that kind of a problem. Well, how do you feel? Do you feel smoking should be banned entirely from San Lorenzo Park?
I think that if it's done in areas where it's not going to impact other people, then it's fine. I have no problem with that. It's just like, but if you're doing it around where there's a lot of people and a lot of people go, you know, on the benches in the middle of the park, a lot of people think that the smoke just goes up into the ozone really quickly, but it lingers. I mean, I've gotten so sensitive because I lived above 2 chain smokers that I can't even handle what's called third and fourth hand smoke. Third hand smoke is what's on their clothes right after they smoke, and fourth hand is what's on their walls and everything. It causes me asthma attacks. I'm on 4 different kinds of antihistamines and 2 hardcore long-term asthma inhalers, and I still can't be around it. It wipes me out for like 24 to 48 hours if I'm around a lot of secondhand smoke.
And I know that the activist Carol Denny agrees with you. She's another activist who regularly writes for and composes songs. She's a musician and longtime performer, as well as the author of the wildly and sardonically and deeply satirical monthly newsletter, the Pepper Spray Times, which I recommend people check out on the internet. Pepper Spray Times. You have to really be a person who follows Berkeley city politics to truly appreciate it, but a lot of her jabs are intended at bureaucrats and officials who are, like Santa Cruz officials, trying to drive away homeless people. Before you, Pat, you want to say something, but I want to add that However, to get an opposition view, someone who believes, for example, secondhand smoke does not exist, or it exists, but it doesn't really constitute any meaningful danger, is activist Becky Johnson, who has written about this and has done research and actually has had interviews with people just trying to show that, secondhand smoke is not a danger at all to ordinary folks who don't have asthma problems. We have a caller here, though, so I'm going to cut you off, Pat. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Robert and sometimes Pat when she's allowed to speak.
Yeah, well, that's the problem is when Pat speaks, the mic is almost totally down and cannot hear her at all.
Pat, try the other mic over there. Pull it over. Let's see. Thank you very much.
Does this one work better?
Is that better there?
Yeah. Well, it sounds good on the telephone.
All right. Well, listen to it off the phone and call us again if it doesn't work, okay?
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. And, yeah, get both of those. You can get two mics, so maybe you'll get double trouble, who knows, or twice as much. You were going to say something, Pat, when I interrupted you?
Well, I was just going to say, it's not that I'm taking a jab at smokers, or I hate smokers, or I think, you know, smokers should be shot on sight or anything. I'm not anti-smoking. It's just that, you know, there's a lot, most smokers are courteous, and if you say, you know, it exacerbates my breathing problems or it causes me not to breathe, you know, they don't mind. They'll move away. And there's a lot of smokers now that do not leave their cigarette butts behind, so that's really nice, too. There's just a small core, as you find in every apple barrel, there's always the few rotten apples that everyone gets affected by.
Do you favor the laws against smoking on Pacific Avenue and elsewhere?
I kind of do because they smoke right where restaurants doors are, and they smoke right where people are walking by. If they were more in the street away where it wouldn't affect so many people.
Well, there used to be a law that, you know, that banned smoking within 20 feet of a window or door. But that was expanded first to include all of Pacific Avenue, then to include all the side streets going off of Pacific Avenue, and then about the same time, actually before, I think, to include all the parks. So my point has always been I took these stats in the only email conversation I've ever really had with Pamela Comstock, city council member is on the extreme right of our political spectrum, was around this issue when I pointed out to her that 70% of the homeless people smoke, and compared with 17 or 19% of the regular population, total population. And she denounced that and opposed it, or she said, no, I don't agree, or I don't believe you. So I sent her the documentation, and she wrote me back, well, I can't really, you know, this is persuasive. And that was as far as it went. But so there is a difference. The reason I talk about the rights of smokers is not because I'm a smoker. I'm not. I'm also sensitive to smoke. I can't stand the smell of ashtrays. It's hard to kiss people who are smokers, for one thing. And I just, you know, it's...
The smell isn't my issue. It's the fact that it makes me stop breathing.
Well, that can be a problem, I suppose.
But I wanted to say is I never had problems in apartment complexes with smoke coming in. And I've just noticed I live in a Section 8 apartment complex on the west side. And it seems like I've counted there's about 10% of the people that smoke, but they were dominating the place and smoking everywhere. So I tend to think not only homeless people smoke a lot, but people that, and I don't mean to sound classist, but people that are poor tend to smoke too. And again, there is no right to smoke, but, you know, I'm not saying that people shouldn't be allowed to smoke. It's just, it could have all been handled a lot better if people met on common ground and showed courtesy towards one another.
Well, I think the main problem...
There should be laws.
I think homeless people are more likely to be courteous than others.
Yeah, they are.
Because they're more vulnerable to all kinds of shit from people who are better off. And also the police would like nothing more than, or at least they're more accustomed to driving away homeless people than to...
I think they're just more courteous generally.
But in any case, that's the reason that I raised this issue. And I think I got a lot off on it a little bit. I didn't mean to spend 10 minutes on it, but I did.
That was my fault.
Generally, almost everything is your fault, Pat.
Yeah, I take the blame for everything.
In any case, if you want to call in, you can. 427-3772 is the call-in number, or one of them, and call in if you'd like. Again, I'm talking about public records from the police department. One of the main records I've tried to seek are those records of so-called crimes, which aren't crimes, really. They're crimes like being in an area you're not supposed to be in, or smoking is one, although, as I said, that doesn't seem to be a big issue in the Poganip so much, although it's hard to say in terms of the number of citations I've seen. We are still trying, by the way, to get people to volunteer to help look through these citations. I've been raising this issue for the last, 6 months to a year. I'm not sure how long I've had some of these documents. And the sooner we find people who are interested in actually contributing to this effort, the more likely we are to get information in a usable form. I get the information. I deal with it a little bit. But I'm trying to, juggle so many different things that I don't really address it at the depth and with the completeness that it requires. Do you want to say something, Pat?
Well, I just wanted to say, going back to being where they're not supposed to be, haven't we found recently, at least in the last year, that they've started making greenery and just even dirt off limits, calling it landscape? You can't be in landscape.
That's always been true.
So that they've made these zones that normally wouldn't be off limits.
What zones are you talking about?
Like when we go in the levee, where there's that ugly ice plant growing or anything green, it says, this is landscape, you're not allowed to stand in here. And it's like, it's just weeds. I guess it's illegal to stand in weeds now in Santa Cruz.
Well, as I said, the attempt to get rid of groups of people who gather regularly, like the drum circle, is a historic example. It now is kind of tolerated on Wednesday behind India Joe's restaurant on the levee. But also there are plenty of homeless people who use the levee or come up and down the levee because they sleep. Some of them sleep on the levee. Some of them sleep in areas that are accessed by the levee. And you and I, Pat, both actually were out there doing Cafe Huff, providing coffee to homeless folks and getting some of their stories.
And sweet potato bread pudding.
It is a place where people go to, when you see them planting all this stuff, and they did this actually along Pacific Avenue. They planted flowers in order to stop people from sitting against a fence. They had these little flowers. They were pretty horrible little flowers. They weren't particularly attractive, but they were a way of saying, well, if you sit down, you're going to crush the flowers, therefore you can't sit there.
I think
it was before, right around the time of the incarnation of the no sitting law, which bans sitting anywhere within 14 feet of a fence or building.
If you're homeless.
Or many other things. No, regardless of who you are.
Well, I see people
regardless of who
sit,
you are.
But
that's
they
what
don't
the
get
law
citations.
Says. Pat. That's what the law
well,
says.
Well, yeah, but what
and
they
so,
enforce.
And so, well, the day you can actually prove that will be a great day. So keep up the good
work.
Well,
we're going to work on that.
Keep trying. And, police officers will probably, and I've also, enforced it against other people, too. But the people who mostly have to sit down are poor people.
And disabled.
Who don't have places to go, and elderly people, and, of course, disabled people. So, I've gotten some police records also recently regarding bikes. And I'm trying to find out, what percentage of the bicycles that the police department gets are actually going to Santa Cruz youth? And the answer is a very, very small percentage. Almost the overwhelming majority are going to auction now. A very small percentage are going to the teen center. And I found out, I actually have the exact numbers, which I'm going to put together, and hopefully someone else will put them together. I don't want to volunteer to do it. I've got them. And who knows, maybe somebody out there, maybe Pat or one of her many contacts will do that. Maybe someone out there in the
I'm
audience.
I'm going to buy a whip for volunteers.
And so we'll see about that. But the fact is, what you have here is essentially police officers and the city council lying about the bike situation. And not really, we know that they don't give a shit about young people in terms of bikes, because if they did, they would be acting differently. What they really do care about, though, is the reputation of the Santa Cruz Police Department and the internal power processes that operate behind closed doors. And I've talked about this on the air. That is to say, the fact that the bike church was closed down as a conduit for bicycles from the police department after working successfully for 5 years for no specific reason that the police department even bothered to tell the bike church until months later, when they had some vague statements, according to Steve Schnarr. Then when we went to Scott Collins, these bikes were siphoned over to the bike dojo. Then they were sent off to auction. Now they have been sent to a few of them to the teen center, most of them to auction. And it's important to get the documentation of this stuff, because it really is quite startling. It's a little different markedly different from the story you hear at the Santa Cruz City Council. And again, the propaganda, because that's what it is. It's merely simply propaganda to, in essence, create excuses why they're doing this. The original reason was simply that the police department didn't like the bike church and wanted, at least that's my interpretation of it. It's hard to tell because I'm not inside the minds of, you know, Chief Vogel or Deputy Chief Clark. You're trying to get a word in here, Pat?
Yeah. You mentioned the bikes being siphoned off to the bike dojo. To say about that, the city council broke their own law by giving it to a for-profit business. All the bikes were supposed to be sent to nonprofits, so they illegally gave them to the bike bozos.
The bike bozos, yes.
Yeah,
that's exactly
that's
who they are.
Really,
and actually, the bike dojo is kind of shut down. I was reading a couple days ago. The guy who runs it, Rob Milas, who is really, he has a nastier mouth than anyone I've met in Santa Cruz. He really is a snappy little guy. And, you know, I suppose that's, you know, in a way that's impressive if we're only directing his fire at targets that deserve it. But he was defending his behavior. And I played some of his remarks last summer at the city council. But anyway.
Maybe that might be why the business, you know.
Don't know.
Changed.
I don't know.
Usually you're supposed to be polite and courteous when you're in business.
What I want to look at, though, are what's happening with bikes, not with him. I don't care about him and his business particularly. And I was actually sent a lengthy document here, which I'm now looking at, which details the name, make, serial number, property number, and value of each bike that was...
Did they send any of the funds?
That was auctioned off between January 1st, 2000 and January 1st, 2014. Although it does seem strange...
Where does that money
go? It does seem strange, Pat, hang on, that almost all... There's a huge number of bikes that were auctioned in the year... Allegedly the year 2000. It looks like some of this must be misprints, but maybe not. And then there's a skipping to the year... Then there's one that was auctioned off in 2001, one that was auctioned off in 2009, and then suddenly bikes begin to be auctioned off again in massive numbers in May of 2013, and that goes through December of 2013. And the amount of money that they get for these bicycles is the value. They don't tell us the amount of money they get. They tell us what they card the worth of the bike. So I went back and made a second request, which I passed on a few days ago. I think it was yesterday, actually, asking Jackie Dressler. I think that's her number. Is it Dressler? I probably have her name wrong. My apologies
no,
to you.
No, that's right.
Jackie, that...
My brother sent public records to her.
I know her first name is Jackie, for sure.
And Dressler's her last name.
Okay. And I requested that she clarify not just what the police department valued the bikes at, which they value... Almost all the bikes at zero. There are about, I'm counting the number, there's one valued at $300, there are three valued at $20 or $25, one valued at $50, another one at $20, another one at $10, another one at $25, one valued at $100, one at $250, one at $20, one at $50, one at $20, $30, $10, $20, $20. But this is, we're looking at 10, 20, 30, 40. We're looking at about 120 bikes. So I would say less than 20 of them does the police department regard as having any value whatsoever. And yet they're auctioning all these off instead of passing them on to a group such as the bike church that was, according to their accounts, distributing them to nonprofits throughout the county or throughout the city.
Can I make a point?
I don't know, but you can try.
Okay, I'll try. If they really cared about these young teens getting bikes or even cared about them, wouldn't they give the proceeds from the auction as a donation to the teen center to help poor children get bikes?
Well, they might be doing that. We don't know.
But, you know, if they were doing that, I'm sure that they would happily give you that in a public record.
Well, I didn't ask where their money was going. That was not.
Well, that might be.
So that may be something
record.
You might want to inquire into. And I also asked them. Well, a third area we've been following is one of them is bikes, one of them is offenses in the Poganip and so forth that are supposedly show the homeless crime wave. But the third is, how is ticketing proceeding on Pacific Avenue? And this is particularly important because of the recent performance cage votes of Tuesday, which you may remember got everybody, you know, singing Kumbaya and Lovey-Dovey at the city council or talking about subjects that I felt were kind of peripheral. Certainly not what I want to brought up. Of course, you got to show up if you're going to do this. That's always the
issue. Exactly.
You know, and then there becomes a conflict in my own.
Or more preparation for the person that shows up.
Yeah, you need to. In any case, the issues of the public records of the downtown area that concern who gets the sitting band tickets. There's not many sleeping band tickets given downtown, but they're tickets for biking the wrong way, they're tickets for smoking, they're tickets for sitting, they're tickets for bike on the sidewalk, they're tickets for failing to move every hour, and skateboarding, sure, if you're sitting there at a table or even sitting there with just a little cap in front of you, you must move every hour, sir or ma'am. In any case, the purpose of getting these records was to show that they disproportionately impact people with designated either as transient or 115 Coral Street, which is the street, the address of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or homeless people, generally, if that is given as their address. And so it doesn't mean, it's not proof that they're intentionally targeting homeless people, though I think they are. It is, however, an indication that it certainly has perhaps what Cynthia Matthews might genteelly call the unintended consequence of severely impacting almost exclusively homeless people. And that's what we have to find out by getting the addresses. And I've sent that back to the police department. They've informed me that they can't give me a readout of that, but they are going to provide, and they are available now, every single citation for the last 3 years, or last 2 years, I guess it was. And we can go to the police department and go through them ourselves and get the addresses.
Which will probably be done next week.
And always welcome to have volunteers volunteering to offer to do that. So that's what I've been trying to get around public records, because I think we need to have the documents to show what is really happening here is something that's been going on for decades. It's an attempt to seize public space and to eliminate poor people from the area and to provide support for, you know, the developers, real estate interests, condo builders, office space builders, folks, you know, also who sometimes want to eliminate green spaces and so forth, although there is a conservative element that supports green spaces and also opposes having poor people in the area, you know, spoiling their view of the ocean, that sort of thing. So we need these documents to actually cut through the crap that we get from the city council.
So that we have actual data to show.
And so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to play some, this is sort of on a separate topic, but if anybody has any comments on this, you can call in at 427-3772, 469-3119, and voice your opinion or your thoughts, and we can, you know, get down and chat back and forth. And Pat, if you have anything you want to say, feel free to say it, since I've been kind of proceeding on my own track here, and we'll continue to do so.
I think it's just too hot today just to even speak.
Okie doke. Well, then we'll move on to some interviews from the street. And this is from last Sunday at the Food Not Bombs feeding, which happens twice a week, right near the main post office at the corner of Front Street and Water Street, right across from the town clock. Starts at 4, goes to 6. Food's not bad, surprisingly. It's vegetarian, so all you carnivores have got to kill your own food and eat it somewhere else. Or I guess you could bring it around, but they're a vegetarian group, so they probably will not put it on the table to be given away to other people. And let's hear some of an interview or two from that neck of the woods.
It is around 4:30 down here on the May 11th, 2014, Sunday afternoon at Food Not Bombs. And here's a man munching away. Your name, sir, is?
Yes, I'm munching away at some dry potatoes that have no taste.
Well, that's Food Not Bombs for you. What's your name?
Sir William Blake.
Of course. So
I had to quit protesting.
This man is a bad. He works for the Feather Oaks, okay? It's the edges.
Anyway.
Not another voice is heard from.
Yes. As I was saying, my name is Sir William Blake. I had to quit protesting and doing solutions, PUF as it was, People United for Freedom, because of the fact that they were coming down on me on tickets, and I got $800 in tickets, two that I deserve. One, I cursed the cop out. He had it coming when he pushed me to my limits, and I couldn't control it anymore, and told him what a nice, beautiful person he was, and in a colorful way.
Officer Barrett?
Winston.
Barnett? No, Winston.
Winston, and I told him in a colorful way what I appreciated about him. And anyway, so I went to court on it.
The basket court?
The basket case, yeah.
Basement level basket?
Yeah, it was basement 10, you know, basket case, you know. Well, for one, when it was my time to go up the bat, by that time, all the people at home with homes got half off on their fines. Of course, me and this other guy, we're the only homeless people left because she tried all the people with homes first, so there were no witnesses. When I got up the bat and I told, you know, what I felt about how the injustice of court was and how you're taking the good people, the innocent with the bad, and you're not considering that I was only looking for solutions to problems, not for the community, not for the homeless, but trying to find solutions and be flexible and find, you know, areas where it could be changed and peaceable among both parties.
You had a table and you were raising issues.
Well, they harassed me, you know, until I couldn't take it no more, so I had to quit. And then they started giving me ticket. I got a parking ticket that I didn't deserve, but I paid it anyway because that goes against my license. But anyway, she, you know, advised me if I fight this, that every one charge is going to take me 2 days worth of court procedures because I have to go through the process and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, that's going to take me 6 good tickets. That's going to take me to September. I don't feel like going to court every week on a Tuesday to September because, you know, I might have opportunities or want to go out of town, have to be back every freaking Tuesday. Not right.
So you agreed to pay $40 a month?
I had no choice because I felt like I didn't want to have to do the Tuesday thing till September. However, when I was talking and saying about how, you know, things, you know, were not right, and I shouldn't have got a ticket for smoking a cigarette when I don't smoke cigarettes, nothing in my hands, nothing in my mouth, pocket zipped up, and there were homeless behind me smoking.
Did the cops appear in court?
No, of course.
This is just the arraignment.
At the arraignment. But, you know, either way, I told him, look, what you're doing, you gave me a ticket without warning when the code says I should have had a warning, and they gave me a ticket anyway. I says, this is not right. I shouldn't even be here defending my name because you're smearing my name. And here's what happened.
Yes.
The lady that was the stenographer or whatever you call them that was typing, she only typed what she felt like because when I was talking for like 3-4 minutes, she quit typing and refused to type what I had to say. Because what I had to say about even the court, how everybody went home and you only got me, the bailiff, and that as a witness. And I said all this in court. I said, I don't think what you're doing's right. Again, you're taking the innocent with the bad. And you don't care, you know. You're just making a bunch of revenue off of
these. Are you accusing Kim Basket, our commissioner, of not caring?
Well, I would think so when she sends all the homeless people, people with homes away first and give them half price off on their fines, but she wouldn't do it to me. She made me pay in full.
So it sounds like a possible
pay in full.
And here's the man.
Don't you think that's a little bit
So what we just heard from hold on a second.
Prejudice.
Of course it is. But what we hear from a man nearby is that he did what I've often suggested people do, which is disqualify the commissioner and take it to another judge. And for those who are listening, that's a good thing to do.
Well, I should have judged her by pulling my pants down and mooning her.
Now that's another possibility. We could. That'll give you and a nice video shot too on YouTube as well. So, what ticket were you able to dismiss?
License plate ticket. They gave me a ticket for
for, you know, the little stickers on the side of the registration sticker, the little, little...
I do.
Over the years, I had kind of collected them around the plate. And so they gave me a just obstructing license plate ticket, so I immediately...
Your artistic work was called...
Before we get into this, from a guy named Brian, who is a regular around town, seen him biking around a lot, had many conversations with him. He's a big supporter of D-Cell and always denounces me for not being a supporter. But he also has he's had some harassment responses from Jeremy Nooner, who is the one of the people with Ryan Coonerty who created the New Space area, which is right around the corner from the bookshop Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue. Nooner and Next Space are the chief suspects in my book for tearing out the three of the four benches that were there, two of them on the Next Space side of the street, two of them across the street. There's still one left near O'Neill's on the side street there, Cooper Street. In any case, but comments about the issues that Sir William Blake was raising, people should know that, first of all, stenographers will never enter the reports, the comments of the defendants into the record. They just don't. What they tend to enter into the record are the judge's comments, perhaps. I don't even know if that's the case. But they certainly enter into the minutes that, and I don't know if the minutes are publicly available, but some kind of document is available. The sentence, the fine, things like your address and so forth. So the notion you should go to court as a forum is really misplaced. You cannot get a meaningful... a forum. If you think city council is bad and we'll have you arrested for tape recording or speaking over 2 minutes or raising your arm in a mock Nazi salute when you think they're acting like fascists, try it in court. They will jail you immediately and they'll get away with it. And not because there's real justification for it. There should be a democratic process in court as well. But it's a much more authoritarian structure. It's been set up that way as a way of, I guess, for efficiency's sake, really. And also there's some, I guess there's some concern that if you want to try people of serious crimes, there can be prospects of, I don't know, jury tampering and so forth. But don't try to use the court as a public forum necessarily. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't, you should take a lot of shit from the judge. Asking pointed, specific, clear questions. The people who will hear you, and it's not televised, are the audience in the court. They will hear you. And probably one of the reasons that Baskett may have delayed the case of Sir William Blake and his not a co-defendant, but the other homeless person said he was in the courtroom until the end is because she does not want the audience to see people objecting to police activity. Now, she may not have known what Blake was doing. I think this is his first appearance there. And he was also, I think, mistaken, and or she was misleading him. I think perhaps a little of both. If you go in for an arraignment, first of all, you don't have to go in for arraignment at all. You can disqualify Commissioner Baskett, who hears all infraction tickets unless you do. An infraction is any kind of ticket you're likely to get, whether it's jaywalking, sitting near a building, sleeping outside, I don't know, not moving every hour, selling scarves, that Sergeant Barnett does not like, whatever. Whatever citation they give you, these are likely to be infractions. And they'll go to Baskett's court. She's in the basement. Her name is Kim Baskett. She's been commissioner for over a decade. And I've thought up, you know, I'm still looking for the right name for her, basement level Baskett case, Baskett. And so you can disqualify her, and you have one disqualification. You don't even have to say, all you have to do is, all you have to do is walk up to the window, hand them a piece of paper with your court, name your case on it, the date and the sentence. I move to disqualify Commissioner Kim Baskett, I believe, and swear under penalty of perjury that she is prejudiced. You don't have to say why. You don't have to prove it. You just disqualify her. And I disqualify her under section, and I wish I remembered the code section, but it's not that hard to find. But they are now telling you you have to go downstairs and get a document. And I was told also, and I think you'll hear from Sir William Blake later in this tape, that he had to pay money to get a copy, to get to buy the document in order to go back up to the window. And, of course, no doubt they'll say, well, you can get a poverty waiver by filling out a waiver form. Now, this, again, all these are new rules that have been used. And, you know, had I the time and energy, I would be up there. If Huff had more members and more active, and we have challenged these kinds of things in the past, the way we challenged them in the past is we simply stood at the window and said, no, we're not moving until we get the forms, until you accept our papers, no. And they called out the sheriffs, and we said, well, you want to arrest us? We're standing at the public window waiting to get our documents. Please, be our guest. And they backed off. But they attempt to intimidate you, and sometimes they don't back off. So you've got to be prepared that they might not back off. And these are always issues that people have to deal with when they realize that, you know, they have 100 other things that are occupying their attention, many people that need their help, you know, 3 jobs to take care of, the rent to pay, the latest medical bills, and everything else that comes down the pipe. So what you can do is I suggest people disqualify Basket to start with. But the usual process, if you don't disqualify her, is you go in, you plead to the court, either guilty or not guilty. Or I don't contest the charge, which is the same as guilty, but you don't get civilly sued or some such thing. It's supposed to immunize you or protect you from that, as I hear from my very limited legal knowledge in that regard. But in any case, then she will set a trial date. Now, in theory, you can also ask for a pretrial hearing on if you want to get documents. Of course, that will enrage her because she has an engine that she wants to proceed on. But you do have, in an infraction case, you have all the rights of in a misdemeanor case or in a felony case, with the exception of 2. You don't get a public defender appointed for you, and you don't get a jury trial. And in exchange for that, you theoretically don't have to suffer the risk of jail. That's my understanding. I'm not a lawyer. I'm supposed to say that, but, you know. I'm just an ordinary citizen. That's my understanding of the law. You can check it out yourself. Let's hear some more from Food Not Bombs. Unless you have a thought pad or something you want to ask, question, a comment, a groan of some kind, perhaps. Okay, we'll move on here. Here's some more from May 11th, 2014, down at the old Chuck Wagon.
Obstructing a license with, yeah, my state of California paid stickers that I felt I paid for and had the right to.
But anyway, your license.
Yeah. And so I went immediately to DMV and they said, oh, well, you know, what do I do about it? They said, oh, buy a new plate. So I bought a new plate for $20-something. I can't remember what. And then they signed off, they stamped my ticket saying that it had been corrected.
Right.
And I went to the, to the window inside the courthouse, and she said, oh no, you have to go see the judge. So then I ended up going downstairs, not thinking that. And I got before her, and she said $500. And I said, I want to disqualify you and take it upstairs. And she didn't seem very happy about that at all. She was hell bent on getting $500 out of me. And I disqualified her and took it upstairs, and the guy dismissed it immediately.
And it should be said that there are 2 ways to disqualify Commissioner Basket. One is to do it at the window by, again, going. Now they're asking you to go to the law library and pay for a form. You shouldn't have to do. A simple statement on a piece of paper should be adequate. But let's say you go do that. The second way is to actually go in on any morning when she is doing arraignments and go before her after sitting in the courtroom for up to an hour or 2, because she may, like she did with Sir William Blake, put you at the end of the agenda, at the end of the court agenda, and then say, Your Honor, what kind of a fine do I face with this? You know, well, you face a $500 fine. Well, I want to disqualify you, you know. You know, go back to law school or, you know, take up journalism in Austin, Texas, along with Rebecca Young, a former district attorney, sanctioned by Judge Burdick. Actually, he sanctioned the entire district attorney's office. In any case, there are 2 ways to disqualify her. One is in front of her and one is before, just going up to the window. The first is preferable because you do not have to actually stand in line to go into her courtroom, sit around there in court. It might be more educational for you to go to the court. And Huff is always looking for people who want to sit in the front row with a notebook staring at a basket and taking notes on everything she does, because that would be a helpful thing to do. I think comment, Pat?
I'll have to pass that along, because going to court and watching it is part of this Communications 8 class. It's one of their activities that they can do. And I always encourage students to do it, especially after I sat in Commissioner, I call her Basket, cases of court, because I was really appalled, because it seemed
in my opinion, that she was extremely racist, that there could be a white person and a Latino person doing the same thing, and the white person got off, and the Latino person got, there was less evidence that they even did it, and they got hit with the full fine.
You know, it seems to me what you, if you ever do that again and you have that same perception, make a note of the court cases as they come up, and then file a complaint with the Alex Carvalho, who's the local court honcho, schmancho, but then also send it to the Commission on Judicial Performance in, I think it's San Francisco or Sacramento, and CC a copy to the Sentinel, well, CC a copy to Commissioner Basket Case herself.
We
so
can do
it respond.
To 60 Minutes. We got all those email addresses. 2020 Dateline.
In any case, it doesn't. I'm not talking about, you know.
But
the,
I don't
I'm not
know.
Talking about the fantasy version, Pat. I'm talking about, you know, what's
I
likely
know, but
to
what I'm
go
saying,
somewhere.
I don't know if I can stomach her court.
No.
But definitely I'll do that, and I'll also send an email to the teacher of the Comm 8 class to send students, because it's very educational. They should know just in case they ever get a ticket for something like running one of those camera lights or something, what they're facing in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, so let's hear some more from, this is Brian, the guy who got a citation, when he got those yearly registration stickers you put on your license plate, I guess he was putting them on as a sort of a pastiche because he thought they were, you know, artistically pretty, and he was accused of obstructing his license plate. I have no idea if it was
accurate. They're the rainbow. They're pretty.
And I think what he did was he then saw that Basket was going to fine him $500 if he. You cannot disqualify the judicial officer, whether whether that is a judge or a commissioner, after you've pled in that court. So you got to be careful. You can go into the court, you can go up to the judge, you can ask a few questions, but once you put the case in her hands at all, or his hands, you're stuck with that judge, unless you can show that judge can be disqualified for cause, and that's much more difficult. Yes, Pat?
I just am wondering, as a taxpayer, for that guy getting that ticket and all the court time that was taken, how
what,
much
what
that cost?
What guy getting what ticket?
Brian, getting the ticket for, you know, putting the little colored tags. I'm just wondering what it costs.
Good project to find out.
Yeah, because it's like seems like such a waste of taxpayer money, and with the economy and governments going bankrupt and states going bankrupt, that these things should be cut out. We don't have
well,
the money
it's a
to
money,
waste.
No, it's a money machine. She's leveling fine after fine on person after person there.
But they lost. Well, her. But you know, the judge that dismissed it, you know, didn't make any money. Because how much does it cost to make that $500 for her?
Well, that's why she
probably $1,000.
That's why she didn't want to dismiss it, and unless he knew about, probably from contact with Huff, who knows? Because he's been around Huff, and we've been I publicized some of Brian's other encounters with the law in the past. It may be that he did this after getting educated, and that's good. But no, they make money off this stuff. That's all about. It's not about. You know, and it's also about upholding the authority of the police department and the sheriffs and the parks and rec rangers. Let's hear some more from Brian.
Judge.
Hey, God, it's been so long.
Gallagher.
The latest thing is a light bulb. I got a ticket for a light bulb being out, and he didn't check fixable on it. And under the code, it's fixable. So I went to the police department, and they signed it off because I corrected it. Then I went to the front window, and they won't accept it. Or she accidentally stamped it, and then realized that, oh, no, you have to pay $200 because it says not fixable, because he purposely checkmarked not fixable on my burnt-out light bulb on the back of my...
Where's the cop?
Officer Azua.
I might have guessed.
And so I went to the front window. So no, so I have to go see the judge. And then I said, well, all right. Well, I want to disqualify Tim Basket immediately. Can I have do I fill out something? Oh no, you have to go down to the library and pay $1, and they give you a form, and then you fill out the form, you take it back upstairs, and she gives you a court date in Department 2.
And you got it. And that's coming up for you?
Yeah.
Well, that's the best thing to do, I think, because Basket.
It's unbelievable. I can't begin to I couldn't even explain to you how horrible of an experience it is down there.
Well, I myself have been personally insulted by Basket when I wasn't even on trial.
I don't remember. Back in the old days, it wasn't like that down there. Usually I could go in, they were pretty reasonable, and it's just become completely unreasonable down there.
Well, I think that these judges are getting their prejudices aroused by the kind of Take Back Santa Cruz mentality that is now floating around like a poisonous swamp in Santa Cruz. That's how I look at it. Yes, indeed. And so I do encourage people, if you get an infraction of any kind, disqualify the referee, actually the commissioner. Kim Basket is the commissioner in the basement. And the way you do that should be just by walking up to the window and giving them a piece of paper that says, I swear under penalty of perjury, I believe her to be prejudiced. But apparently they're not letting you do that. They insist you go down to the law library and get a form. Did you have any trouble getting the form?
No, I had no trouble. She knew exactly what I wanted when I went down there and handed it to me.
It's a popular procedure.
They've already got the form, like, copied, and they have a cover copy on top of it that explains how to fill it out. And
when is your court date coming up?
Soon.
Okay, well, I wish you luck with that.
Are you able to just call it?
So apparently also I've just learned from our man here. Are you just anonymous, or do you want to say who you are?
Brian.
And Brian, you were charged $1 for this form?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, the last I heard, supposedly they were giving it to you free. Before that, of course, all you needed was to write out your own simple statement without putting it in a form.
They won't take that anymore.
And now apparently they are fucking around with your rights. So if I ever get up the energy, I'll wander on over there and inquire further. And we've been talking with...
Brian.
Thank you, Brian. Broadcast, not for...
And now I'm going to turn, any comments from... Also in the studio with me is the tremulous doctor, Michael O'Grady, a nasty man with a scalpel, and even nastier with a tape recorder. We won't get into that at this time, having abused him thoroughly for that. Not thoroughly, but I'll abuse him more in private about that one later.
Have a joke.
No, jokes are not allowed. And besides, your mic is down. Sorry. So, the city council on Tuesday did its cosmetic makeover, kind of, or mind wash, or brain soapy whoopy poo of the community around the issue, which really pissed everybody off, or many people off, last fall when the city council shrunk the already very limited space on Pacific Avenue and zero space. It didn't shrink the space any further in other business districts, so it was already zero, where you are allowed to either play a guitar with an open case for donations, sit with a sign that says, need spare change, with a little cap or cup or dish next to you, set up a political table to do voting, set up a table to have scarves or any other art objects for sale, paintings perhaps. All this was reduced to about 5% of the sidewalk, and actually less than that when you consider you're only allowed to do it an hour a day in any particular location, and you have to move 100 feet away from the location you're in once you are accosted by Officer Barnett or one of his buddies out there. So... there was a massive reaction to this. There were protests for some weeks. Huff did most of them, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. But there was also one organized by Micah Posner, council member's father, who was really pissed, and he was out there doing a protest. And there was a lot of anger among the merchants, the street merchants, the street vendors, as well as the street musicians, as well as the artists, as well as people generally who really saw this change in the law as a form of, as just an open blank check for harassment. And what the police have done as a response to that was they sort of backed off because they realized, and you can realize yourself as you walk along Pacific Avenue, that a good majority of the people who are out there doing anything are doing it illegally. Because there are three things they did that severely reduced the space, even the small space that was currently available as of, let's say, I don't know, August or early September of last year. What they did was first, you had to be 10 feet away from a whole variety of objects,
14 feet.
No, you had to be 10 feet away from a variety of objects everywhere, and that was That was what the previous situation was. But this meant that there was about 20% of the sidewalk left, less actually, for you to be in if you were setting up a display device. Less because of this 24-hour move-along law, or hour move-along law, don't come back for 24 hours. So what they did was they implemented a new law claiming there was clutter, claiming the issue was too complicated for people. They were going to simplify it all by just reducing everybody's rights, and that'll make it much easier to understand. See, right now, as it was before, if you sat down or panhandled, you had to be 14 feet from a building intersection, kiosk, bench, et cetera, leaving you with 5% of the sidewalk. And having you sit mostly next to the curb where you can breathe in the healthful fumes of the passing cars and interfere with people opening the doors of their cars and all these wonderful things.
Exactly.
Which will be the next chapter of their restrictions, no doubt, down the road somewhere. But if you were a display, if you were doing something else with a display device, you only had to be 10 feet from a building. So if you brought your own chair and weren't sitting on the sidewalk, you could be 10 feet from a building. Or if you were standing as a street performer and you had your cup in front of you, you only had to be 10 feet away. So this was what the situation was before. Now what they did was they made it 14 feet for everything. So that removed 4 feet of space. And if you look at all sidewalks and business districts other than Pacific Avenue, you'll find they're about 10 feet wide. So even before this change, there was no place to legally play a guitar, set up a voter registration table, anywhere where there are buildings in any business district in Santa Cruz. Caller first, I guess, and then I will continue with my exposition. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert, Dr. O'Grady, and Pat.
Oh, hi, Robert. It's Dave. I'm a sometime activist, person who's been on all walks of life in Santa Cruz. I just was sort of listening to the show, and I thought I'd call in. It's just interesting to see how things change. I mean, I made this whole list here. I was just reading the what you call the urinal the other day.
Oh, yes, the Santa Cruz Scent Anal, as they call it.
Yeah. And I was reading about the Slakey Brothers like car repair shop being turned into a sports authority eventually.
No idea.
Yeah, well, it looks interesting. I know that that is a spot where I've seen people sleep sometimes on that sort of awning over by the railroad tracks.
Oh, okay.
It's just interesting. I think that those tracks, you know, where I lived for a long time in Illinois, they had a big rail trail conversion. I don't know, just thinking about all these things. And, you know, it's just Unity Temple, there was a protest yesterday that I happened to observe where there's a chestnut tree. And it was kind of cool. I think maybe, I don't know, a small crowd of people had a bunch of signs saying we should save this chestnut tree and the Hyatt Company. That's a good protest. I mean, a tree is a very subtle thing, but it actually is part of a whole place. So anyways, I was just listening and I thought I'd call in. I think that I don't think that a lot of this stuff will even be here 100 years from now. I mean, the new stadiums and retail stores, I mean, if the sea level rises, then, I mean, what do you, I don't know.
Glub.
Yeah, I mean.
So let me ask you, is the tree still standing on Laurel Street?
Yeah, I've watered it. It's on Broadway Street.
I'm sorry, yeah, Laurel on the other side, Broadway on this side, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of at that juncture there where Riverside and Laurel kind of split off, and then it's up the street. It's by the spot where all sad things, where that woman got attacked by the person who was partially trans.
Well, maybe this was a public safety move to remove the blocking foliage. So that next time.
No, it's on the other side of the street.
Well, you never can be too careful about that, you know.
Yeah, public safety. Got to remove that foliage.
You got to remember that mantra. If things get rough, start screaming needles and public safety, and you'll be all set.
Well, you're crazy about the needles. I mean, I volunteer and I help clear away unwanted vegetation sometimes. And I would not want to get stuck by a needle. I've found them all over the place. I think calling it a needle stick, I mean, I know you're playing devil's advocate a little bit, but...
Well, no, I'm serious about it. I mean, I think you're... No, nobody wants to be cut by glass, stuck by needles, injured in any way. How many needles have you found in your experience as a person cleaning up?
Well, I just found one over downtown.
Over a period of how long?
Well, you know, I've been working on this particular small garden for 3 years.
Okay, so in the course of 3 years, how many needles have you found?
I found one.
Okay, well, I mean, and I'm not saying that's a pleasant experience, but see, the claim that there is a massive danger of needles suddenly is to me horseshit, not just because the volume is small compared to the number of needles that are turned in to Needle Exchange and to the two kiosks that are available in Santa Cruz and Watsonville.
Yeah, I've seen the one by the county clinic on M-Line Avenue. And,
but also, let me finish my sentence, David, but also because needle sticks are a danger. You know, they're a danger anyway because they're psychologically, you know, frightening. But I'm afraid of needles. I don't want to get stuck with needles either when I go in to get a vaccination. I don't, you know, no thanks. You know, nervous. But you know, it's far more danger for a medical technician when you're dealing with live blood. That's when there's actual danger of transmission. As I understand from what I've read on, you know, in, you know, Wikipedia or whatever, and I've not seen any indication that there's any serious danger whatsoever of HIV transmission. Tiny amount of danger of, you know, hep
C. Like hepatitis C or
very something. Little. And so, you know, I'm not saying it isn't a danger, but I'm saying there are much greater dangers that are not being addressed. This is used as a political football to kick the homeless around and to press an agenda to, you know, increase police bullshit is how I see it anyway.
Well, one thing, I mean, I like to go down to Main Beach, and now it's closed from midnight to
Cowl Beach is
dawn.
Closed, right?
Yeah, which and is kind of. But you can cross the dry part of the beach, which seems like it leaves a lot of leeway to prosecute people who are on the beach. I'm a little nervous to go down there at night because if I cross the dry part after midnight, which is late, but if I cross it after midnight, I could be stopped there, which makes me nervous. I don't want to run afoul of the authorities, you know.
Well,
but sometimes
you just
nice
don't trust
out.
Your authorities there, caller. I mean, you know, they know what's best for you. Stay home, you know. You know, remember, we are in a state of extreme emergency here. If you have to surrender
well,
a few
but I
rights.
Guess the reason I went off on that particular tangent was because that Cowles Beach to the right of the wharf there,
yes.
That's where they were finding heroin needles and perhaps diabetes, insulin needles and things like that, which I can't imagine that being a particularly fun experience. I mean, but, yeah, I mean, people in the lower income tax bracket often have a drug addiction. I mean, I'm not being particularly eloquent.
People in the higher income tax brackets also have drug addictions, and people who come to party for the weekend from other places may bring their needles with them and leave them here. I mean, you know, I'm sorry. This is, you know, it is framed falsely as far as I'm concerned. They have no data to show that the claims that
so
they're doing.
So it's a perception thing. They're just sort of.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't, you know, they might be right, but there's no, to me, it hasn't been proven, and that's the point. Also, you know, down in Venice, they're trying this run the homeless off, and the Coastal Commission is saying, no, you can't close off the beaches without a permit. You got to show them there's a reason to close public access to the beaches even at midnight. And we haven't done this. None of us have gone to the Coastal Commission and demanded, you know, what the hell's going on here? We could do that here, too, if one of us wanted to. So you perhaps can take the bull by the horns and can tell. You know.
I could be the hero. I could step forth and
you could
go to bat for
you could be denounced by Mayor Robinson.
Get all these forms and pay for them. And
there you go.
All my time and energy. And
yeah, think of that. You could spend the rest of your life working on coastal access to Cowl Beach at midnight. I got to roll on you, caller, because I want to play some of this, frankly, horse shit from City Council that we had to listen to last Tuesday.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Oh,
yeah, I mean, I would be a street performer. Music is drawing on the right side of the brain. I mean, think about the brain and how much it's just good for it to, you know, to have these different experiences. All right, I'll see you later.
Hey, thanks for calling in, man.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. And for those of you who are interested, I don't know if this thing is archived yet on the city's website. I see Dr. McGrady here. and made a legal recording by making sure he attended his tape recorder at all times at the city council meeting last Tuesday. Strictly following the law, or at least to say the rule of the city council, which actually kind of drove me away from the city council last Tuesday. I was not interested in doing that, and it meant that I would probably just be banned from the chambers, and I would have to face a possible arrest. And, you know, I wanted to have my best jail duds on when I come back to do that, and that may be next Tuesday after next. It may not be at all. It's a deterrent for sure, no question about it. And those people who airily suggest we can, do skits around the issue and then suddenly duck out at the last minute, got to be aware that one can be afraid of it. One has natural fears around these issues that will come up. Confronting the city council is no fun thing to do. I'll tell you. I mean, it's uncomfortable. It's nerve-wracking, but for some of us, it has to be done. Yes.
I just wanted to make two points that I found really disturbing from that meeting, because I even
talk loudly.
Okay, I'm trying to talk loudly. Hopefully, this is picking up now. But and I saw the face on Don Lane when Pamela Comstock and Cynthia Matthews and even Mayor Robinson kind of joined in this trio. And being an artist, I found this really insulting. And I know all my artist friends, a lot that participate in Open Studios, would have been insulted too. But she called performers and street vendors, artists, they called them sidewalk clutter.
Yeah, you know, you talked about this at some length yesterday at the Huff meeting,
and
there were a lot of things that disturbed a lot of people about what the city council did and said and what the city council members were saying. Unfortunately, the most obvious things that they did were completely ignored by the audience and had no reaction whatsoever. And this is what I was contrasting with what happened in September. In September, everybody realized, and this is what I was talking about before the last caller, before September changes, you had to be 10 feet away with these display devices from all these different objects. But the following additions were made. First of all, they suddenly added trash cans to everything. And trash cans were added with nary a peep from Don Lane and Micah Posner, who could have come back 2 weeks later and said, well, it's horrible to have all this stuff, but let's not add new problems by making all kinds of new holy objects downtown that you have to be 14 feet away from.
Street furniture.
And trash cans were... No, street furniture is not mentioned. Trash cans are mentioned. And they were never mentioned before. That's the first thing. The second thing is now suddenly they were requiring 12-foot distances between people who were doing different things, whether it's tabling or playing a guitar with a display device or just simply sitting with as a panhandler with a little sign and a little cap in front. You had to be 12 feet away from another person. And, of course, you also had to be 14 feet away from a bench and 14 away from a building and 14 feet away from a trash can. In addition to this, you could only take up 12 square feet total with everything you had, all your artwork, all your political literature, whatever you had with you, it had to be 12 square feet. 12 square feet are three of those squares on Pacific Avenue. That's enough maybe for one person to play. No one in the entire time mentioned that this was an incredible restriction in public space that was not impacted in the least by anything the city council did last Tuesday. We have a caller. Yo, caller, you're on free radio.
Hey, Uncle Robert, David Silva here, David Mitten Silva.
Hello, David.
Enjoying your show. I am thinking, listening to your guest, I'm thinking maybe I should buy some ballet slippers, and if I tippy-toe on my toes, I might be able to find a place where I can demonstrate.
You can demonstrate wherever you want, as far as I'm concerned, David Mitten Silva.
I'll buy you a tutu.
I needed your permission, you know that. Okay, you guys, keep up the good work.
Right. So what I'm just mentioning this because it was so glaring in its absence. I actually put out a flyer that I asked people to read, and I guess you distributed it, Pat, at the meeting, which said the staff says this, but the real truth is this. And we had a Huff speaker speaking for 5 minutes who didn't quite pick up on that. Had some good points to make, but the main points that I was making was there is no change, no extension of space being done. The only thing that is being done, and it hasn't been done yet, it's being proposed, is that there will be, they're going to be fluid in the spaces that they're going to allow, but it's still going to be the same amount of space, tiny, 5% of the sidewalk. And so you can, and the way they're going to make it fluid is they will chalk you in with little performance cages or boxes on the sidewalk. Yes, you know, and so they will have these
jail bars.
They will, you know, it won't be a jail bar in terms of you won't be able to step outside it, but if you do, you're subject to criminal penalties if you are engaging in First Amendment activity involving a display device, which is their way. It's always been their way of eliminating the homeless looking people downtown, or the youth downtown, or the undesirable people downtown that they want to get rid of, but they haven't got a law for. You know, or it can be also sidewalk clutter. I mean, they don't want to. They know that the Constitution does not allow them to state, okay, we can get rid of homeless-looking people. Instead, they have to eliminate it. Everybody there. And that's the point. They have to say no one can sit within 14 feet of a building. Now, what they're going to do is they're going to say, well, we'll eliminate those space restrictions. But you will only be able to play a display device inside these little areas that are boxes that are painted in. And so it will deal with the situation where people, for years, actually a decade or more, musicians have said it makes no sense at all to play on the curb facing the stores. Because, first of all, people gather with their backs to the store windows and they block the displays. Whereas if the performer has his back to a non-window area, and the performers and the audience is gathering around to take a look, they can see the display devices. They're more likely to look into the stores. They're more likely to, perhaps, this is the theory that Tom Noddy, the street
it's
performer, you know, it sounds like it's quite plausible. It may well be true. So they are. That is the one thing they're doing that makes a little bit of sense. And they also, Don Lane is talking about removing some of the street furniture, ironically, in the places that are already free speech zones, like O'Neill's, and I don't know about the other place that anything is going to be removed, the Scribner statue area in front of the Coonerty Bookshop Coonerty, also known as Bookshop Santa Cruz. So what I'm going to do now, that's the basic point. I'm going to start playing the council discussion on this issue, because... not because it's worth listening to on its own. It's not. But it's useful to understand the kinds of evasions, misrepresentations, omissions, and general self-congratulations that are happening here. I'm not going to play a lot of it. I'm going to play some of it. And we'll see how that goes. If you want to call in, you can, 427-3772. And I got this off the live stream when it was happening. This is some of the... There was about an hour of public comment. Most of it not terribly good, I didn't think. Huff made a five-minute presentation in which you spoke, Pat, and I think you winged it a lot, and you did what you could. I think it was one of your first long speech before City Council.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's a difficult thing to do. And you didn't have a speech. You were just given a flyer to work
and
off of.
I just made points.
And you made points that you thought were good.
I said I was going to shove in as many as I could in the 5 minutes I had.
Right. And, of course, my concern, of course, and, you know, I'm looking for the basic points to be made, which are you're not changing anything.
Yeah,
you are keeping the same amount of space.
I was coming from an artist's point of view, too.
And also, Huff is a homeless group. It's not interested in artists. We're interested in homeless people, whether they're artists or musicians. And this is what this is really about. It's not about artists and musicians. It is about eliminating the rights of everyone, including artists and musicians, in order to eliminate the rights of homeless-looking people. That's what it's about.
Well, that's kind of my same point. I didn't like the fact that, I got the feeling from Pamela Comstock, Mayor Robinson, Cynthia Matthews.
Yeah, you already said this.
That all of the people selling downtown, they aren't artists, they're homeless people. And that was really kind of insulting to
No, it's insult. It's insult.
To not even look at homeless people as being able to be at a level of an artist, because they are. There are a lot of people, both housed and unhoused, that are incredible artists.
And that
yeah,
was my
I don't.
Point.
I don't think Cynthia Matthews would claim that. I think I mean, you know, I hear you, and I think there's a mentality there, which really what they're stumbling around with is they don't like to have to restrict street performers and artists at all.
They'd like them
they,
to go
they
away.
Want no. They would rather have them stay as long as they can get rid of homeless people. They want to keep what draws tourists and get rid of what doesn't. And they want to put it all in a nice
but
little.
They
want to put it all in a nice little pretty package, and the pretty package will be in these little boxes in different places. And if you fit into their little boxes, that's good. But this is an attack on street culture. This is an attack on the rights of people to form their own culture in the street, provided that it maintains a public space. It doesn't. Not a space that is boxed off in ways that please a merchant class, but rather in a way that accommodates all groups. And there was no input of a meaningful kind from performers other than a few contacts that Lane made with individual performers. He listed a long line of groups he met with, merchants and police and hosts and all kinds of other people, but not, finally, he added at the end, and some performers. He didn't say some police or some merchants. He talked about these as categorical groups, but he said some performers. I'm going to play this now. I'm going to begin.
I just want to say that I agree with you on most of it, and I just wanted to make one point that was really upsetting.
Do it quickly.
Yes,
I want to get
I will.
Into this.
Because those same three that I've named before also suggested that people that were selling art and were Santa Cruz residents, whether housed or not, that they weren't really welcome in Santa Cruz. They could go to some other city that supports artists and sell there, which was like, why would they not want
that
talent?
I heard that differently.
That was outrageous.
I heard that differently. I heard them say Santa Cruz could do a similar fair thing that these other cities could do.
No, that was Don Lane kind of brought that up, and then it
okay.
was hushed out.
But that's not, to me, see, that's the kind of peripheral stuff.
Well,
that
we just have a difference of opinion.
No, it doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is what didn't get said and what they're covering up. And that is, to me, very secondary. But, you know, it shows, you know, that they're a biased perspective.
Well,
I'm going to play this now,
poor.
Right now, is what I'm going to.
On May 13th.
I will say, you know, in our efforts to reduce visual clutter downtown, keeping it simple and elegant, I appreciate it. I very much like the idea of.
The guy who's talking here is Chip of the Downtown Association. He was the last speaker. He's a former kind of an artist promoter, a former musician, who for years has been sort of bought and sold by the Downtown Association.
Express where it is and isn't legal to engage in these activities. So thank you so much for your work on this.
That was really the signal comment that we continued to hear. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for considering this. We really appreciate this. Appreciate what is my question. Appreciate the fact that they're continuing to allow police to harass people downtown, having crowded them into these tiny spaces. And actually, the other thing that was not said, which was the most important, is that people are ignoring these laws, and that the police are also ignoring these laws when they choose. Because you can't do stuff downtown under these laws. You really can't. I mean, it's and they're saying it's confusing. It's not confusing. I mean, you can count out 7 squares from here and 7 squares from there. But when you find, when you've done this, is there's very little space left to be. And therefore, you get kind of, you know, you spread out anyway. And when you spread out, you are illegal. And when the police see this, they generally say, oh, well, you know, what am I going to go after every person who's taking up 16 square feet instead of 12 square feet? Only if they are Kate Winslet, who's selling scarves, who officer, you know, or Sir William Blake, who's doing a protest, somebody that they want to take care of, you know. And so the two main points that were missed at this council meeting was, this is a complete cosmetic change and has nothing to do with any expansion of space. It has nothing to do with what we were so angry about in September. No one was really angry. They were all, oh, gosh, we're kind of hopeful. What can we do? This is a positive plan. Oh, we're all getting together to change things. No. There's no change being anticipated or proposed. The whole idea of changing the move-along law was completely dumped. There's nothing to do in terms of that. Everyone's still going to have to move every hour if a cop comes along and tells them to, even if nobody wants their space. It's completely artificial and designed to make it an inhospitable, hostile environment for those the police choose to make it hostile to, and those the merchants choose to make it hostile to. And the second thing, of course, is it is completely impractical because it is already illegal. Everyone's operating illegally, and the police are it becomes simply a police state issue. If the police say they're going to get you, they do. If they choose to let you go ahead, then you go ahead. We don't have a set of laws down there anymore. We have a set of patrols is what we've got. Patrols, hosts, and so forth. And also, it tends to make people have a lot of contempt for the law because they know these idiots on the city council who made this law have no appreciation of the fact and don't really give a damn. It's done almost for a political purpose to pander to a particular political group, it seems to me. Take Back Santa Cruz, the Downtown Association, a couple of merchants who are particularly concerned about this issue, and I don't know who they are this time. Last time it was the Pacific Trading Company, Jackson Shoes. That was 10 years ago. I don't know who's actually behind this time. Let's hear some more about the actual council debate. Chip was the last speaker, I believe, on the public comments section. And I'm not playing people's public comments because I was very disappointed in their public comments. Although a lot of people made very good points, as you did, Pat, about disability being essentially disadvantaged and not being accommodated. And that's one of the things you're looking for is the is there be an accommodation for you from the city attorney's office that you be allowed to not have to move every hour and move your table every hour and so forth. And as a disabled person, you should have a right to do that. I look forward to hearing more about that. But let's hear what the city council says.
Thank you. And with that, let me bring this back. I think there's some... number one, I want to really appreciate all the discourse and the tone. And
this is Mayor Robinson, who's really appreciating all the tone and the discourse. And I do want to say one thing, you know, that commends her. She did allow people to speak for 3 minutes each. Unlike at almost every other public hearing she's held. And I don't know, it's because I've been, raging on her, or because this is this issue of a lot of... She wanted to make it appear, at least, that there was a lot of public input being allowed. And as I said before, there was no public hearings before this meeting. Don Lane and Pamela Comstock did not say, come on in and give us your opinions at a public meeting where you're going to be able to speak and show us your diagrams and tell us your experiences. No. It all was shoehorned into this situation, which then gave explicit orders to the staff, which are find out areas you can write with boxes on the sidewalk and come back to us in 4 to 6 weeks. Something to that effect. I believe that was their resolution.
A lot of the information, I saw all of us taking a lot of notes from what you provided for us, and I think that I wrote down some questions. I saw that Vice Mayor Lane wrote quite a few of the questions, which I leaned over and said, do you think you can answer some of those as the two of you that really worked on this? So I think we'd first like to see, and I'll just turn it back over for now, because I think you can answer some of the things that came out as questions from the members of the public.
Feel free to interrupt me, but I'll try. I think some of this, in the end, my answer will be really just my own perspective on it.
And this is Don Lane, who's the vice mayor and the smiling guy who's going to give us all the wonderful improvements in the downtown performance space that doesn't involve any improvement in the downtown performance space.
And to some extent, as someone said a few minutes ago, the devil will be in the details, and I think we're trying to take it one step, one level at a time.
And actually, the devil isn't in the details. The devil is in the basic outlines of what he is proposing, which is no restoration of the space that he actually voted against the proposal when it came up in September to restrict the space. But there, I think he did. I believe that's my recollection. However, he's not pressing to have it restored. He isn't even suggesting that he'd like to see it, but maybe he's going to get outvoted, or he'd like to see it, but he's afraid he's going to be blacklisted by Take Back Santa Cruz, or he'd like to see it, but, he wants to get reelected. I don't know what, and he could say any number of things, but at least mention the principle. He does not do that. And that is why this is so deceptive, this whole thing, one of the reasons. And I do admit, letting a small number of performers go into boxes that are next to buildings will help them. So you might say, Those boxes that are next to buildings are a good idea. But the idea that you have boxes at all is itself such a profound change in how Santa Cruz conducts its street activities. And so very... The word fascist is overused, but it certainly seems like an extremely profound shift in how things are regulated without any justification that shows, you know, we've had 15 assaults by street performers who are foaming at the mouth and attacking young children who are passing by. Nothing like that is actually... There's been no stats that show a need to have all these forbidden zones. You know, and you, Pat, you've mentioned clutter, you know... That's an aesthetic concern, and it's the concern of some people, and it's not necessarily the wrong concern, but there are many concerns that are, people have conflicting concerns about this. And one of the other elements, obviously, is the right of people to engage in a First Amendment activity with a display device, yes. One thing that was stated by Mike Rotkin, former council member and mayor, who came up there, and he actually supported the whole proposal, but he said... When people, some people were saying this takes away First Amendment rights. Unfortunately, they weren't very specific, but they were right. He said, you have a First Amendment right to play music anywhere on the sidewalk. You have a First Amendment right to make speeches anywhere on the sidewalk, so it doesn't take away any rights. Yes, you do, but no, you can play anywhere on the, you can do it anywhere on the sidewalk, but you can't do it with a cup placed on the sidewalk or with a table that you have with, to register voters. You can't use the most elementary devices on the broadest sidewalks in the city, which aren't going to block anything. So I know I won a lawsuit on that. The only lawsuit I ever won in Santa Cruz was when I was arrested for blocking the sidewalk by the late and much bemoaned Sergeant Butchie Baker, who was shot dead last year and has been endlessly mourned since then, and used as the poster boy to bolster every police state bullshit notion that you can imagine. You know, every financial piece of moolah-boolah coming down the road that the police department wants, it's suddenly, let's get all solemn about the deaths of Sergeant Baker and Elizabeth Butler. I have to go off on this because I really, it really pisses me off. It's not that, I'm sure that, that the, this is, anyway, so... You know, blocking the sidewalk is not the issue. The issue is culture war against low-income people, homeless people, hippies, minorities, people that a certain class of people, another class, merchants and conservative residents, don't want there. And they're going to make it as difficult as possible. And that's what this is about. And it has to be put in clear terms for the community to understand that this is not, they're not accommodating people here. They're not looking for solutions. None of that is happening. And it is essentially a stall tactic to discourage the kind of protest that happened after the last round of bullshit from the city council, last what I call sidewalk shrinkage laws. Let's hear some more of the city council discussion.
Also, the council, in its direction tonight, may sharpen some of those details, even if it doesn't address every detail. So some of these are yet to be answered. But just a couple of a few that came up. One is about being close. You know, could they be closer to buildings when the business is closed? And I think that, unfortunately, would be pretty complicated for us to take on. Except, but there's one possible window of opportunity there, which is, if there was, if we, as we, you know, when we go a little deeper into this, if we're creating some additional reservable spaces.
Again, misinformation. Creating additional reservable spaces. There are large, see, what Lane is doing is he's already assuming if once this passes, there will be a very limited series of boxed-in spaces, little cages where you can go. They won't be metal cages, they will be essentially intangible and invisible cages. If you outside of which, if you step when you're with a display device, you will face a fine of somewhere between $150 and $350. So none of that was mentioned by anybody in the audience who came up and talked about this. So the real nuts and bolts of what's going on, what's continuing tonight, tomorrow night, every day on Pacific Avenue. There was no move, although the Huff meeting on your motion, Pat, move to not only suspend but annul all citations around the downtown ordinances, which I think is a great idea, and I think Huff is going to forward that to the district attorney, not district attorney, the city attorney, who is the person who would who processes those tickets. Yeah, well, of course, there wasn't confusion at all. There was police officers who decided to enforce against some people, not against others. You know, in any case, let's hear some more.
That are kind of a little different than most of the just any time you can use the space, but we do have a few spaces that are reservable. It is conceivable, I suppose, that we could make a reservable space adjacent to a business that would only be usable and reservable when the business was closed.
And this, again, is talking about accommodating a specific group, the Marimba group, which is, they play very nicely. They're a great group that plays in front of O'Neill's every, I think it's once a month, maybe more frequently. They used to play more frequently, but, you know, it's become more difficult because of these, you know, these regulations, and also because they have to move over the space of other people. That's another thing that's going to happen. Although I anticipated a lot more crowding than I think I've seen and heard about in the last 6 months downtown, partially because it's such a hostile environment. People don't want to come down there. And the people that do come down there are those who either have formed deals with the police in their own way, or there are those who are new to town and haven't heard what's going on. They haven't heard the bad news. So Don Lane, you'll notice, mentions one reservable space next to a building. They're really talking about very few spaces. And the whole idea of a musician being able to come to town and spontaneously play from where they used to play next to buildings and not be hassled unless, you know, there's some real problem that comes up that involves real violations of the law, you know, that, you know, whether there's a real blockage of the sidewalk, that, you know, that would be a basis for some kind of concern. That's not happening. Although often the blockage of the sidewalk is a popular concern. I mean, if somebody is that good that they block the sidewalk, then they bring people around who buy things in the stores. I mean, it's ironic that there's this self-defeating attitude. Let's hear some more. But I remind you, this is all kind of shell game cover is what we're seeing here by the city council. And the problem is not that the city council does it. We know they're going to do that. That's their role here. The sad thing is that the community went along with it. They, oh, well, you know, we wish you would have some accommodations for disabled people. We really hope that there's a place for artists to be. And we hope you all have a space or two where people can be. We really appreciate the work. All this kind of stuff, all these caveats, which are, you know, they have some individual importance, for sure. But they missed the basic point, which is there has to be outrage against this maintained constriction of public space. And, you know, for those who are law and order freaks, this also means that law and order, this also means that those who are dedicated to the notion of the law are going to be seeing illegal shit all over the place downtown, as they have, because this is what we're seeing. It's not dangerous illegal activity. It's completely understandable illegal activity. Oh, you're 13 feet from a building. Oh, you're taking up 16 square feet. All these things are going to be happening. But the problem is enforcement is now in the hands of police officers, one, who have better things to do than this kind of stupid shit. Two, this is a waste of money as well. Three, it is a form of sort of friendly fascism because you're leaving these decisions to police officers. And you can't judge what is it going to be inside the next cop's mind or the next bigot's mind who wants to press a cop to do an arrest. Although it really depends. I mean, we heard earlier today Pat here in the studio trying to get a citation issued to someone for sitting down, and Sergeant Bush initially saying what he'd look into it or something.
Yeah.
He's saying he'd look into it.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
then we have got no indication that that's actually happened, though maybe we'll get an update from you. In other words, and we've tried to have citations issued for people, like we had a guy sitting on a bench for more than an hour, and he had a big sign, "I'm sitting on a bench for more than an hour, watch me." That was a Huff activist, and what happened was a police officer. I think it was Officer Wilson, who's a nice woman. I went up to her and said, "There's someone across the street. I want to pull out a citizen's arrest. They are sitting on a bench for more than an hour," and she just wouldn't take it. And the police will tell you things like "I have to go somewhere. We're real busy," but she wasn't real busy. And so the point is that you are giving the police officers the power to harass. And even if they are the best folks in the world as human beings, it is not a good power to give people because it corrupts. It tends to corrupt. Pat, you've been trying to interrupt for the last 2 or 3 minutes. What is it you want to say?
Oh, I'm just making comments. Absolute power corrupts absolute.
Okie doke. Let's hear some more.
I'm not really recommending we go down that path. I just wanted to be responsive to that question that someone raised. When will Margani return? Only Margani knows. I have had a couple of conversations with him about this, and he was, I don't want to speak for him, but I felt like they were very positive conversations. He felt like, this was moving in a direction that, was pleasing to him, maybe not perfect, but... He was positive.
This is part of the mythology. Oh, it's not perfect, but it's moving in the right direction. We're going right along. The only change that has any positive substance is the few people that will be allowed in the one or two spaces that are next to buildings. That's the only change. I guess the other thing he said was, we might remove a piece of street furniture here and there to allow for a kind of a larger area for a couple of the larger groups. Well, thank you so much, Don Lane. I'm really pleased to hear that. I mean, we're talking about sidewalks that are supposed to be for everybody's use. And there has never been shown, and this again was not mentioned during the discussion, if there's no problem. I guess this might have been said vaguely. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. What is it that required these ordinances to begin with? And the answer was merchant pressure to eliminate a class of people from the sidewalk and give the police more power to sweep them away and not have people saying police harassment, selective enforcement, because that's what they were saying. And so to stop that from going on, they essentially changed the laws and rationally, ex post facto, made legal what the police were illegally doing anyway. It's a form of saying, we're going to okay the stormtrooper activity downtown, although it's not being, they aren't breaking the windows. They aren't painting, yellow stars on people's windows. But what's happening is people are being told they can't use public spaces in ways that they think they want to, that they have traditionally been able to. That is a part of the whole Santa Cruz scene. And it looks like Michael O'Grady is trying to hone in on my tirade. What is it, Michael?
I just want to tell you the highlight of my evening at the council meeting is when the guy representing the merchants downtown, when he finished talking, I booed him, and my friend here, Pat, got the blame.
Oh, dear. Well,
I got a chat by Jeremy Leonard and Brent Adams thought I booed him, and I sat there very politely and professional, and I didn't boo him, but it was mine.
You can't be heard, of course, because you're not speaking into the mic, but that's right. Perhaps people can hear you. Well, we could boo you here. Boo, boo.
That's how we booed no one.
Right. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, it was me. I booed because I figured the merchants are the cause behind all these changes. Like you were saying, they want the homeless and the people who don't dress too well. They want them removed from their high profitability.
Now there were some other other things that have happened in the last few days. I'm not going to have time to get into because we've taken so long with this subject and time does fly. One of them was, there were two protests yesterday. One was against the war in Ukraine and U.S. support for the Kiev regime or government, depending on whose side you're on that one. And the other was for the Governor Brown's attempt to fund prisons more extensively. And I believe there were other things happening. M.H. Cann had a meeting that I guess the Huff members were going to go to but didn't get to. Those who said that they were going to go but didn't get there. Oh, very interesting. You're going to pay, you Huff members. And you also got to the sheriff's debate in Bonnie Doon or something. Where did you go, Michael?
I went to the civil, the county civil building, and I was looking for some activists or demonstrators. I didn't find any, so I wandered into this meeting they had about affordable housing.
What did you find?
Nothing but a lot of red tape, and there are a lot of figures that would take a long time to process.
No place to sleep tonight, in other words, except the Paul Lee Loft, where you'll be going back tonight?
I have a comment. Yeah. Affordable housing in Santa Cruz isn't affordable. I've seen their numbers, and from what I get from SSDI, I still couldn't afford them.
I think it also violates the state law and the state guidelines around affordable housing. And that's a whole other issue. I know that during the same oral communications where the two of you spoke very eloquently, reading one of my fine speeches about how people who are doing recording at city council should not be arrested for doing that, that there was another man who came up to speak, Ed Davidson, who said he was going to take the gloves off. And he actually usually spends a lot of time licking the butt of the city council. But this time he was saying things like, you know, he was very angry that there was no affordable housing. He was angry that all these perks and considerations are being given to real estate developers. And he's been around for quite a number of years. He's very I think he was rather specific in his comments. And I may ask him to come on the air on Sunday when there's a longer version of this show. We have about 5 minutes left for callers want to call in if they have any comments or updates. 427-3772 is the call-in number. I'm hoping to post something on IndieBay regarding my thoughts on this meeting, which I pretty much expressed. I said there were three main things that didn't get said. That really the reason that I was angry they didn't get said was not because they aren't obvious, but because unless they are upsetting people, we are not going to have a resistance to this latest nonsense, which is essentially a stall tactic. They're trying to see how quickly they can bake the lobsters. We're the lobsters. They're raising the temperature of the water, and they're doing so slowly so that we don't feel upset. And already it's working, because people who are enraged 9 months ago are acting as though the council is rational when the very proposal that it makes doesn't restore the space that they stole before, and in fact introduces this absurd cages and boxes thing, which is a real slap in the face of people who believe in civil liberties on the sidewalks. So I will be talking more about this on Sunday, playing more of the city council, and I will be interrupting with my usual caustic commentary. That's all I've got to say on this subject right now. I probably have a lot more to say, but let me see if there's more I can pass on as kind of quick news briefs before I hit the road. Do either of you have any additional bits of news you want to bring up?
Well, I don't know if you heard on my speech, but I did say to the city council that the public sidewalks belong to the public, and why are they making the decisions as to what goes with them? So I did call them out on that, and I looked right at Mayor Robinson. So I'm like, you don't have the right
again.
To
you're
tell
talking,
the public.
Pat. You're talking to the wrong people. You don't need to talk to the city council. You need to talk through the city council to the community.
But I was saying that in my speech.
Okay.
So it wasn't for the city council. I agree. It was for the audience out there. The public has the right to make these decisions.
And of course, what we have to do is organize in some way that the public voice can be heard, and that's always a challenge.
And that's what I did say,
frankly,
in my speech.
I don't know if it's actually going to happen, because it's, we'll see if people start to do it. It happens if people start actually protesting downtown. If people start challenging the rules, like, for example, rules about recording at City Hall, City Council, or if they instead try to work around them and accommodate them, as apparently happened at the last meeting.
We're talking about a Crafton where people don't sell anything. They just sit there and knit. They don't take any tips or anything, and we just line up. We'd like to get like 30 or 40 people to just sit with like TV trays and a chair just to make a point as a protest.
There also was a meeting of, that's not a bad idea. There was a meeting with Bob LaMonica, who's running against Ryan Coonerty for the supervisor seat, last night in Bonnie Doon. I don't know how that went, if anybody has any info on that. Well, perhaps that's somebody calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Maybe not. I thought you were, but you're not. And Pat wants to give Nina credit for the idea of the craft, and we'll see if she actually gets out there and does it. Talking is one thing, doing is another. And it's not, you know, talking is good. I mean, somebody presents the idea. There was also a sanctuary camp and a warming camp and a, you know, what are we going to do with a homeless symposium notion that I guess Stacy and Brent Adams have been working on. They had a meeting yesterday. I don't know what happened to that. I haven't heard back from that. Brent, of course, posted